please the court.
Sir.
Emmett Queener for Mr. Twitty. Throughout Missouri's history of prosecuting possession cases, we have not prosecuted persons for possessing a substance that was not seized from them by the police. That's not how we prosecute possession cases in Missouri. Police officers don't arrest, prosecutors don't prosecute, and courts don't convict persons of possessing objects or substances that is not in their presence.
But what about the situation here where the defendant admitted that he had possession of it?
What he admitted was past possession. And the way the statute is written, the language of the statute requires current possession, current presence of the substance, because it's written in the present tense, has.
At the very time of arrest.
At the time of arrest.
So if you watch them flush it down the toilet, but you can't get the arrest in before it happens, you're not guilty.
That's a little bit different hypothetical than
why?
I was sort of prepared for it. But if the officer sees it, that may make a little bit different situation where you can see something, where he sees a substance being disposed of.
Why should
the problem?
Oh, go ahead.
Okay. The problem still is, that's an interesting hypothetical, but there's no case where there's been a conviction under those circumstances. I've researched, looking at the briefs and some of the other cases, the question of flushing controlled substances down the toilet. What I came up with are cases talking about entry without a warrant under exigent circumstances or the issuance of a no-knock entry warrant. What that tells me is Missouri has prepared a method by which police can avoid that circumstance. They're equipped with the tools so that they can get in there, get the substance while it's present. The language, the history of our litigation has always been premised on the presence of the substance being there at the time.
Your argument is based on the fact that the statute at issue is written in the present tense.
Yes.
Possesses.
Has.
Has.
Has in his actual or constructive possession.
The first degree murder statute is in the present tense. Knowingly causes the death of another person.
I believe that's different. A different temporal language, causes. It doesn't. That's not the same as has in his possession at the time. I think that's the difference between those two statutes. It doesn't say that the person has to causes it in the presence of a police officer.
What about the cases where the substance has been used and sometimes a co-defendant or just a testifying witness is that we possessed cocaine. I know it was cocaine because I used cocaine regularly and it made me feel like cocaine. Or the marijuana cases where they've already smoked the marijuana.
Okay. I think that you may be referring to the four cases that the state had in its brief, the Kreutz, Neil Moore, and Roper. In each of those cases, and I think that, I don't believe we've had a case where a defendant has been convicted of possession on his own without that substance being there. These cases that are cited by the state, the element that they were contesting at that point was the nature of the substance. That's where the drug users were talking about this was cocaine, was marijuana.
Yeah, it's a lot farther stretch than this one in that respect. Not only is it not there, there was nothing there to test. They had to prove it was possessed and what it was. We know what the substance is in your case.
Right. Well, in those cases, that's what the issue was in those cases, was the proof of the nature of that element. It was those users who were testifying this was cocaine, this was marijuana, this was moonshine.
So your argument is if you'd have been their lawyer, you would have won.
I may have argued the case differently. I mean, the issue in each of those three of those cases that were cited by the state, the question of the presence of the substance wasn't addressed. We don't know whether it was there or not there.
You're asking us to imply the words in the statute. It says a person with the knowledge of the presence and nature of a substance has actual or constructive possession of the substance. And you're asking us to imply at the time of arrest. Why couldn't we as easily apply within the statute of limitations period?
Because of the way that that language is written, and I think our history has shown it's always been present. Part of that history are those residue cases where...
Well, you're saying nobody's addressed it, because, I mean, we haven't seen a case that says if they don't have it in their possession at the time of their arrest, you don't have a case in Missouri. You say it hasn't been an issue, but is that maybe because it doesn't matter if you're actually holding it at the time, as long as there's evidence that you possessed it and you're arrested and prosecuted within the period of statute of limitations?
I mean, I think in all of the cases that we had reported, it's been present. I mean, I don't know if you were making a distinction between actual and constructive there at that point. Even in the constructive possession cases, it has always been present. It's been in the trunk of the car, the other room of the house, in the meth labs, in the shed out back. But we've always had the cases come up where the police have the substance in their custody. They arrive at the scene and they seize it.
Why should the court create a special requirement for drug cases that would be different than criminal jurisprudence? The language of the statute is present tense, which means present tense at the time the crime is committed. So the person has to have possession at the time the crime is committed. And when part of the proof of that crime is a confession, criminal jurisprudence requires that there is evidence that supports that confession. We cannot simply rely on Mr. Twitty's statement that he possessed it in the past and convict him on that. There has to be additional evidence that supports that, and in this case, there was the evidence that he purchased the substance and that the packages for the drugs were found that same day in his trash. So why is the element of that he actually had it in his physical possession not supported, and that was at the time he committed the crime, not supported by his confession?
I think I'm not asking this court to create a special element in
well,
possession
that,
cases.
That the crime has to be committed at the time of the arrest, so that's different than any other crime that we know. It's you can commit the crime not at the time you're arrested.
Well, because that special requirement is what's contained in the statutory language.
What about these scenarios where law enforcement has forfeited or confiscated a bunch of marijuana and they just hire an undercover officer to go sell it to 100 people and they don't care whether they use it? They know what the substance is, they sell it to 100 different people, and then when they're all done with the sting operation, 2 or 3 months later, they charge everybody with possession. But of course, it's not there, it's gone.
It was there at the time that crime was committed when they purchased the marijuana from the undercover officer.
Well, this would have been too.
This was not there.
It's not. You say it has to be at the time of arrest. The hypothetical says the arrest may happen months later. You're saying the police have to see you holding it. That's a very different argument.
But what that under that scenario, we know that substance was present at the time that crime was committed when it was delivered to that individual. It was in his possession at that time. Here
well,
we
what
don't
about
have,
when this guy bought it?
I'm sorry?
We knew it was in his possession at the time he bought it.
But it was not in his possession at the time that the officers determined that there was a crime being committed. Under your scenario, the crime was being committed when the officer transferred that marijuana to the buyer.
Do you have any case law to support your theory on this?
No. There's just no cases out there where this has happened. All of the cases under the possession offense, have the substance present when the officers are there. I think what
why
our history...
Why wouldn't an admission be equal to that? I mean, I understand certainly it's helpful if the officer saw you holding it, but here he admitted he had it. So why is that not equally sufficient?
Admitted it plus other evidence. The receipts right. from where he purchased it, the acknowledgement that he knew that this product was what the pills were, and that he even went further and acknowledged that he traded them for the finished product methamphetamine. I mean, this makes a pretty difficult case for you, I think.
I don't think it does because of what we've done with our residue cases. Our residue cases tell us it has to be there at the time of the police involvement. And Baker, they said, all the residue showed was past use. The McKelvey and the Moore cases that came after that said, no, if the police confiscate this pipe and there's residue in it that contains a controlled substance, that's possession. You can be convicted of that. I think that's where the line is drawn in the law, that the possession has to be at the time of the seizure. The reason I think that's really important, and particularly requiring at the time of the arrest, is that creates a clear, bright line test for when the person has the controlled substance in his actual or constructive possession. Is it there or is it not there? That bright line test is served. If it's there, he can be prosecuted and convicted of it. If it's not there, then he can't. That is a very simple, bright, clear test, and I think that's what our law has basically developed over our history, and I think that's what the Eastern District opinion was saying when they said this is the unambiguous language of the statute, has on his person or within easy reach and convenient control. Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court. Every statute defining a criminal offense, pretty much every, as far as I can tell, is written in the present tense. And Judge Wilson mentioned the murder statute. There are statutes that have the has construction as the definition of possession. In this case, rape, if he or she has sexual intercourse with another person, sexual contact with a student is a crime if he or she has sexual contact with a student. So this has construction as used in the definition of possession is not unknown. And the other criminal offenses, for instance, murder, causes the death or kidnapping, unlawfully removed, all of them are written in the present tense. Police investigate crimes that have already occurred, not are occurring in their presence. In this particular situation, there are multiple instances showing, or evidence showing the defendant actually possessed the pseudoephedrine multiple times during the course of that day when he went to the pharmacy and bought the cold medicine. When he went back to his apartment, took all the pills out of the blister packs, when he packaged them in a different package and drove to the commuter lot and gave them to sold them to the person he sold them to for meth and $50.
Are we opening up a can of worms, though? Say you prove somebody was in the house 2 days earlier and was in the bedroom where it turns out you find the dope on the bedside table. Can you say he possessed it because he was there last week or last month or last year? Are we opening up too vague a definition of possession if we don't require you to show possession at the time of arrest or at the time the officer was there?
Well, in those situations, it's all going to be based on circumstances. And all of the elements of the offenses, including possession, can be proved by circumstantial evidence. If all you have is someone happened to be in the same place days before drugs were found later by the police, that may not be sufficient evidence to prove that person's possession. In fact, just recently, this court handed down an opinion where there was a suitcase of drugs right next to the person. That goes
a satchel. But that's what I was wondering. Does that you know, would that affect those kinds of cases?
And what those cases, I think, are going to the element, not so much that the person has on his person or in convenient control, but the knowledge element. Mm-hmm. And the residue cases that Mr. Queener was talking about, it goes to the knowledge element, because not only do you have to have it on your person for actual possession, but you have to know its presence in nature. And residue cases, the issue in those cases are the person did not know, because there was a residue that could not be seen, that person did not know, even though there was actual possession of it, didn't know the nature of it.
And right. Here it was a few hours before.
Right.
When he made the admission to the police that he'd had possession a few hours before. So does that make a difference?
Well, we know knowledge in this case by him saying, well, that's what I was doing. I was buying pseudoephedrine, and I was taking it to this commuter lot, and I did it three other times this month to get some money and some meth for it.
But what if he'd said, I did that last month, as Judge mm-hmm. Dith is suggesting, or I had done that 3 months ago, then is it still a possession case?
Oh, if it hadn't been that same day? Or you mean
where do we draw the line? Is there
an attenuation issue where if the statute's 2 years or I have no idea what it is, could you prove something from that long ago?
As long as it's within the statute of limitations and it's within the charged time period of the information or indictment. And in this case, they charged him with possession on that day. He possessed it, the pseudoephedrine, at first at I think his girlfriend purchased at 9:23 a.m. He bought the second box at 9:57 a.m. And then he came home and did all the repackaging and took it to the commuter lot. And by the time the police got there around dinner time, 6 o'clock or so, he'd already traded it and nothing was left. But it was all within the same day. The circumstantial evidence showed that he possessed it on the charge date within the statute of limitations. If it had been the police didn't come till the next day and the same things had all happened, not a problem. Even a week later, not a problem, because we also know that the boxes that he tore up and put in the trash can were the same boxes that he purchased at Walgreens. From the lot numbers corresponded to the national precursor log where the sales were recorded by Walgreens.
What if he hadn't confessed in this case? Would we have enough evidence?
If he hadn't confessed?
If you simply had him purchase the pseudoephedrine and they go to his house later and all the packages are open and the drugs are gone.
Well, it makes it a real... It certainly would make the intent element real difficult to prove. Maybe the fact that there were all these suspicious purchases would tie in to show the intent. But the confession really, it makes it as solid a case as if the police had just were there and caught him with the caught him in the commuter lot with the pseudoephedrine. I don't know if, I hadn't really thought about if he doesn't confess, first, would a prosecutor have brought it if all they found were some torn up boxes in the trash can? Perhaps not.
You still have to prove he's the one who opened the packages because it has the element of possessing with intent to manufacture.
Right. You have to show...
Well, he doesn't confess, but the person he sold them to testifies. Right. I mean, there has to be some evidence, but doesn't that, I mean, in this case, if he hadn't confessed, but you had the person in the commuter lot who tied you, I mean, there's any number of ways to make a case. Most of these cases are circumstantial, but some of them have direct evidence.
Right. And maybe the police would have gone to Walgreens and got surveillance video showing the defendant buying the cold medicine, but they didn't need to in this case because he confessed to everything already. Judge Fisher, the case that you're hypothesizing, that was Krutz. That was the drug dealer testifying, yeah, I sold this guy cocaine.
Months before.
Right.
Small amounts.
If the police had a sting operation in the commuter lot and caught the guy buying the pseudoephedrine, and then he decided to testify for the state that Mr. Twitty, yeah, he sells me pseudoephedrine regularly so I can make meth. that would be other evidence showing that he possessed it on that day.
Well, and it shows knowledge of the nature of the substance, and it shows intent to manufacture or to aid in manufacture.
Right. And all that's present here from his confession. And this was a bench trial. The court said that it could reasonably infer from the evidence, with this evidence and the fact that Mr. Tweedy said he did this regularly, that he knew he was trading this, and he traded it for meth, in fact. And there was testimony from the officers that pseudoephedrine is a necessary ingredient for making meth. So the evidence in this case was sufficient to prove possession. Unless the court has any other questions, I'd ask you to affirm the conviction. Thank you.
Thank you.
May I please go? Excuse me. I think what's really important here and what is consistent with the argument that I've been making, that we want to find the substance in the person's physical or actual or constructive possession at the time that the police are there, is reflected by what the officers did in this case. The detectives looked at the Implex records. They saw what they believed were suspicious purchases. There's no crime committed there. There's no probable cause to arrest. They just go out to do an investigation. And what did the officer say he was going out there to do? To talk to those people to see if they still had those 40 pills in their possession that they had bought that day. This is how police investigations are done. If it's a confidential informant that comes and says, I've been buying dope from this guy for a long time, they don't just go out and arrest him. They do an undercover buy. They do. They get a search warrant. They go out and search the place. They get the substance from the person at the time they make the arrest, when they're saying the crime was, you know, committed, when the violation occurs. This Implex record didn't give these detectives a reason to go get a search warrant, to go get an arrest warrant. They did an investigation to see if the substance was there. We don't prosecute for possession on a positive blood test. We don't prosecute for past possession. We find the substance on the individual's person or under his constructive control, but it has to be there. And that's how we have always prosecuted drug cases in Missouri. And the reason for that is the definitive nature of that test. To show us with the specific language, and I realize that, you know, this is not necessarily unlike a lot of other criminal cases, but the legislature has specifically defined possession in a certain way, and we need to apply a test to that so that we know when that violation of the law is actually occurring, so that we don't incarcerate people wrongly.
Do you disagree with that, with the state, that criminal charges are virtually always in the present tense?
The language, no, I don't think they are. I mean, take the murder, for example. I mean, whatever the language is, the murder can occur, causes the death, can occur at some other time before, almost always occurs, before the police discover the body, discover the incident, find the murderer. But that is considerably different than the person has on his possession at the time this substance.
How about possession of stolen property that the person may end up selling?
As far as I'm aware, I mean, I haven't come across a case where there has been prosecuted for possession of stolen property where he doesn't have the stolen property. I came across a case, and I apologize, I don't remember the name.
What about the pawn shop cases where it was prosecuted, where the evidence is that the owner at the pawn shop bought it from this person?
I don't know that you could prosecute them for possession of the stolen property, probably for stealing that property. The case that I'm aware of, an individual stole a handgun from a hotel. They discovered who he was. They tracked him down. he didn't have the gun. He had thrown it in a lake, got rid of it. He was prosecuted for stealing the gun from the hotel, not for possession of stolen property, because the gun wasn't there. He had disposed of it. The pawn shop cases, you can probably prosecute them for the stealing. I don't know if you could prosecute them for possession at that time.
Prosecuted for receiving.
Or receiving, perhaps, yes. But I'm unaware of a prosecution for possession of stolen property when the property is not in the possession. Similarly, juvenile in possession of alcohol. The substance, the contraband has to be present.
Okay, thank you. Case will be submitted.